I won't. We don't need to make this a podcast of me trying to think of something. unless.
Wait a second.
Do you think that's a good idea?
We need to talk.
Did I just stumble upon a great episode of Welcome to Rated NAD podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 242, and I am your host Matt. Wasn't there an I'm your host Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
Wasn't there a an industrial band called Front 242? Was that
there
their
was.
Name?
There was. Yeah. Yeah, Front 242.
Wow.
Yeah.
They weren't very good.
No. I was like, I loved industrial for some reason growing up. There was a band called 16 Volt that I was really into. Scott was around during this time. I don't know what was going on. Anyways,
it was like 2.2,
man.
Yeah, it was.
People thought industrial music was like, this is going to be the future. We're all going to live in a dystopian society where reality stars almost become president of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it was Mortal Kombat was really big in our lives back then, and that had a lot of industrial music in it. And
that's true.
You know, the Crow, of course.
Yeah, My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult.
Yeah, and Mother's Day Out from Mortal Kombat was spelled with a U.
Skinny Puppy.
Skinny Puppy.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
those were the bad old days.
Those were the bad old days. Man, you guys, you know what? The 90s were the best. I'm just going to come out and say it.
So you guys aren't still listening to industrial music, is what you're saying?
I'm not, but I mean, I have an appreciation for the era.
I wish it existed.
So this week on the podcast, Matt played all the games. So we're going to take a look at Telltale's Batman Episode 1, which came out like last week, I think. And then Telltale also published a game that they did not develop, but Night School developed, who is the maker of a game I really enjoyed, Oxenfree. They dropped a Mr. Robot game for mobile, which is awesome. And then Gamescom is happening as we speak, so we'll talk about some news coming out of Gamescom, along with some Blizzard and Titanfall news. And we'll probably just shoot the shit, too, because that's what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I believe so.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, this episode's brought to you once again by Loot Crate. Loot Crate's theme this month is anti-hero, so go mad with glee by getting yourself a special Harley Quinn item and Suicide Squad comic book download this month, as well as items from World of Warcraft, Archer, Kill Bill, and Hellboy. This month's crate also comes with a full copy of World of Warcraft, crazy,
whoa,
with all the current expansions and 30 days of free game time. That is nuts. So head on over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA, that's RATEDNA, and you'll help out the podcast and get yourself a discount in the process. And as always, we thank Loot Crate, and we thank you guys, because there's still been some signups, which is cool.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, Ash, what have you been up to?
Man, you picked me first because I've done jack shit. I was like sitting here while Scott was doing the rundown, like, what the fuck did I do this week since we last recorded? And the answer is next to nothing. I guess the only thing relatively new, it came out in February, that I consumed this week is the show Love on Netflix, which is
did
a
you
Jedi
like
Patel
it?
Show. I actually really did. It's super dark and depressing and awkward. But I really love the performances in it. So if you're looking for sort of a kind of quirky, painful comedy about two people finding love in Los Angeles in sort of the movie scene, the actory scene, definitely check it out.
Can I just say, becoming a father's changed you, man.
Why?
Because like a year ago, there is no way in hell that you would have picked up this show, watched it, enjoyed it on top of that. Like, you've watched stand-up comedy, you've watched Love. Like, I don't know. I know you just got a lot of time in front of the TV, but this is a whole new Ash that we're talking to now.
Yeah, I'm slowing down, man. I mean, less rock star energy drink and mainlining hard drugs these days. I just kind of sit down and watch people, you know, watch people laugh. It's a whole new thing. Yeah. But no, love is really good.
I couldn't get through it. I started, it's one of those shows that I'm like, oh, I'll go back to it at some point. But I started, it got like, I want to say four or five episodes in, and then just kind of like, not even purposefully, just kind of faded out on it. Like started watching something else. I don't know.
Well, I think the thing about it is the characters are all so self-destructive. It's hard to watch them make the decisions that they make.
Yeah.
Like great things almost happen to them all the time. And then they'll just do something completely human that we all do to just kind of sabotage themselves. But I really liked the characters. I liked the sort of dark humor in it. I ended up really enjoying it. So I'm interested to see what happens in season two, because they are making a season two. And I really like Gillian Jacobs too. She's great. So
yeah, she's awesome.
Other than that, I've been watching some crappy movies as well that are right now streaming on Amazon. I watched Terminator Genisys.
What did you think of this movie?
You know, I liked it better than I think the last two Terminator movies.
Yeah, I'm glad it you was feel
like,
that way.
Yeah, it was okay. Like I was expecting to really hate it. I didn't buy I thought everyone was good except for the Sarah Connor, the Khaleesi Sarah Connor.
Oh, you didn't buy Emilia Clarke's Sarah Connor?
I didn't buy that at all.
Okay.
Was it because she summoned dragons to win at the end?
No,
or?
It's because like, you know, like Sarah Connor is supposed to be like this super military shredded badass, and she just kind of looked like a 15-year-old. I don't know, she just didn't look like, you know, first of all, she didn't look like an adult, and second of all, I just didn't buy her as the Sarah Connor.
She does have a very young look, doesn't she? She does.
Right.
I feel like it's very hard to one up Linda Hamilton's Terminator 2 style, you know.
Well, even if you watch the Terminator TV show, you had what's her face?
Yeah, Lena Headey.
Lena Headey, also from Game of Thrones, an incredible Sarah Connor.
Who was awesome, totally awesome, right?
Right. So it's like topping those two characters as Sarah Connor is very, very challenging. She wasn't awful. I just, you know, it's hard when other people have played the same part and done an incredible job. So
other people on your own TV show.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I didn't, you know, I thought I was going to find the whole thing with Schwarzenegger to be hokey, but it was cool. I thought the stuff they did with him was cool. There's a scene where like an old Terminator fights like a young Terminator, and I thought that was really neat. And so, you know, if you can see it for free, I say check it out. It's like 2 hours, and it's pretty okay.
It's also like nonstop action, which I really appreciated. It was kind of just the movie didn't take itself too seriously, and they just delivered a lot of great action sequences, which is like, hey, if you're looking for something fun to watch for 2 hours, that's pretty much what you need right there. Yeah.
And there's, if you're into like the Terminators, like the tech behind them, there's a lot of different Terminators in the movie. So like, you don't just get like the T-800 or the T-1000. There's like a bunch of different types, which is sort of cool to mm-hmm. check out. But
yeah, that part's fascinating too.
It's weird, because this is like one of those franchises that people just like love, but no one can get right. And this was seen as like a failed rebooting of the franchise. I don't think they're making another one. So it'll probably be like another 3 or 4 years, and then we'll get like another reboot of the franchise.
Well, you know, what's really weird? What's really weird about Terminator is that every film in the franchise is different, which is bizarre for a franchise, right? Like,
right.
So Terminator, the first one, is almost like a thriller, right? And the scope of the movie is very small. Terminator 2 had like that summer blockbuster vibe.
Right.
And then Terminator 3, which I think had like the female Terminator in it, was like almost like a B movie. And then there was the one with Christian Bale, which was just like super dark, you know. It was
the
like
Salvation.
He was almost like a Christopher Nolan's Terminator or something, you know. Uh-huh. And then what was the? I think there was one after that, and then this one, you know. And they're all kind of like in a weird spectrum. Like when you go to see a Terminator movie, you don't even really know what to expect at this point.
Well, they all have different directors, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then like Cameron's was the only one that was actually like mega successful, correct? Well, actually, like the first one was successful.
He did the first two.
Did he do the first two?
He did the first one. And
so like
one.
The first one was successful, but the second one was like humongous, right? Like that was what blew up Terminator's world.
That's the touch point. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then the third one was just like, they just wanted to make more money, but they put, I don't remember who did the third one, but it wasn't either. Cameron.
Yeah.
So it's like it's been handed through so many different people. I feel like that's what you're getting. You're getting this weird take on a brand. It's essentially just like a brand of robot now, right? Like
yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
It's yeah. No. It was pretty good. The other thing I watched, surprisingly, that was actually really good, was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Right?
It was surprisingly great. Skipped it in the theater. These movies have just kind of gotten better and better. I remember, like, not really digging the first two or three. And then, like, J.J. Abrams did one. And these past couple, like, I want to say 4 and 5, maybe, have been really solid. And this one had some of the best action sequences I've seen in recent years. So if you can see, and this is also free on Amazon
now. They're all Bad Robot, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they're all produced by him, but not directed.
Yeah, directed. So. Yes. But anyway, that was good too.
I think it is? Tom Cruise, like, he did the couch thing, and we were all like, ah, well, we're done with Tom Cruise. Like, immediately, like, the whole nation just decided we were finished with Tom Cruise when he started jumping on the couch, right? And, like, every movie he's done since then, though, has been, like, quietly very good. Like, they're all solidly great Hollywood movies, you know? Like,
what was the, like, the space movie? Not Live, Die, Repeat, but the other one that came out around that same time?
It begins with an O.
Or with an O, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, that movie was awesome. Like, that was really awesome.
Even if you don't like Tom.
Oblivion, yeah. Yes. Oblivion was great. Die Another Day, or whatever the title ended up being on that one.
Live, Die, Repeat. Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow was fantastic. Like, these Mission Impossible movies are all really good. Like,
hey Ash. Ash, have you seen Edge of Tomorrow yet?
Oh, not yet. Still stuck in the damn.
What, Xbox. do you not you don't have the disc or something? Like, what's the problem?
But anyways, I think my theory is that, like, Tom Cruise didn't change. We just, like, the collective attitude towards him changed, even though, like, the movies have all been still quality. Like, I don't think he puts out bad action movies.
Yeah, apparently
it
doesn't change the fact that he's not a bad actor either, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's a Scientologist, you know, so whatever, go with that wherever you want. But like, the movies he does, you're still like, oh, these are actually pretty solid, fun movies to watch. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So definitely check that out. The female lead in that, Rebecca Ferguson, was also absolutely incredible, super believable female action lead. So check that out. And that's about it. I haven't really been playing much other than Overwatch. Not going to talk about that. But
I berated you out of talking about Overwatch. Overwatch.
I'm going to talk about it a little bit this week, because there is some cool stuff that you guys will appreciate. But let's see. Let's go to Matt. What did you do this week?
Not a ton. I mean, I played games that we're going to talk about, but I binged. I don't think I talked about this on the last episode, but I binge watched 30 Rock. Like, all of it.
That's
just
a great
idea. Yeah, so it was my birthday, and I took Friday off, and it was 190,000 degrees in New York this weekend, so I didn't really leave my house, like, honestly. It was really... So my whole team at work is all Floridians. We're all ex-Floridians who've moved north. And we were all talking about how insanely hot this weekend was, to the point where, like, my friend of mine, one of my coworkers, went to DC for the weekend, and he said he couldn't go outside for very long because it was just like he would die kind of heat. Like, it was gross. It was heat that, like, you know, you guys both wrote me and were like, is it really that bad? And I'm like, it's really bad. So we didn't go outside, really. We just kind of stayed in, and I watched 5 seasons of 30 Rock.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
Wow.
So that's, I think, somewhere in the range of, like, 33 hours of 30 Rock that I watched. It's such a good fucking show, man. That show just blows me away with how good it was at writing jokes about itself and, like, small references here and there that they'd pick up later. And then, like, knowing what you know about Kenneth at the end of the show, when you rewatch, like, season 1, they were making jokes about him being, like, an Eternal who would one day take over the station. Like, it's, like, these crazy hints that get dropped so early on in that show that were really kind of amazing. So watched a bunch of 30 Rock, watched a bunch of Olympics, some more of that. Nice. I feel like we have the best female gymnast team that we've ever seen in the history of Olympics, seemingly. They are unbelievable to watch.
I feel like we have the best female teams in almost, like, a lot of the team
almost
sports.
Our track and field team's really good, although their beach volleyball team got beat the other night.
But they got the bronze.
Yeah, they got the bronze, but they got the Brazilians took them out, right?
Yeah, but, you know, Kerry Walsh Jennings is only 26-1 now in Olympic competition, so maybe she's not the champion we thought she was.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you know.
Apparently, when you remove an entire country for doping, the medals open up a little and America starts winning some more. So.
Yeah, how about that?
Weird. Huh. And then, it was my birthday, so we didn't really do much. Melissa was sick. We just kind of hung out at the house. I made some killer dinner that night for myself, which I was pretty proud of, but not too much. And then some gaming this week, so
nice.
We'll get into that later. But yeah, I feel like what I did was a lot of the same thing over and over again and not necessarily a bunch of fun stuff. So, but that's okay. 30 Rock's amazing.
Yes.
Scott, you're the only one left.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
I'm going to start by breaking a rule. Pretty much the only rule on this podcast that I have, this past week, I won Major Nelson's Free Code Friday.
You hear that? After I've been giving you shit about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be like, man, he doesn't love you, Scott. And now he turns out he loves you.
Yeah, that's funny because I had been entering pretty consistently for a few months now. And like eventually Ash tweeted me from Nerd Appropriate and was like, Major Nelson don't love you. And then literally 1 week after that, I won the Free Code Friday. So
I always thought that you two were having like some sort of secret relationship because you'd be tweeting at him all the time like, Major Nelson. I'm like, this is just getting a little scandalous.
Oh, no. You know, for a while, Kyle was doing it from Reset Transmission, too, and then he kind of stopped. But, I just kind of happened to be sitting at the computer when he announces those things on Friday. So I'm just like, what the hell? And I actually, I did this one on a whim because I was, like, actually in the middle of something else in between meetings, and I just stopped at my computer for a second and put in a response. And then I'm like, driving home, and all of a sudden my Twitter is, like, blown up, and my phone's making a bunch of noise, and it's like, I have a DM from Larry Erb. It's like, congrats, you won. Here's your codes. And I was like, wow, that's surreal.
Nice.
That's pretty awesome.
Now, does he, because of that, does he follow you? Or is it just like he follows you and unfollows you?
No, because Twitter now has, I think
verified
it's,
messaging.
Yeah.
I think that's right. That's right. You don't have to follow anymore.
Right. So he just, he DM'd me the codes. And I just said, I said thanks or whatever, but he obviously didn't write me back. But yeah, that's
why
pretty
aren't
awesome.
We verified? Huh, Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why aren't we verified?
I think we hit 70,000 tweets this month.
That's incredible.
Jesus Christ. I'm not even kidding.
68,000 of them were in the past month.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. So yeah, I won the season pass for Telltale's Batman, and cool. I won the like deluxe edition of Just Cause 3, which
nice.
It's like an open world destruction game from what I gather, which is cool. So
I feel like that's like a good like Sunday you got nothing to do, just sit around and throw that on and play.
Yeah. I really enjoyed what was that game that EA had back in the day? It was like Mercenaries.
Yeah.
And this kind of like reminds me, has like similar vibe. Looks like just run around and blow stuff up.
I played through Just Cause 2. They're really fun. I think you'll really like it.
Sweet. Yeah, so that's that started my week last week. Something I forgot to mention from the last podcast is that, did you guys know that the Transformers animated movie is 30 years old this past week?
I saw you tweet about that. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. And it's just like, it continues to blow my mind. Just what the nature of the movie is, because of the soundtrack in the film, the people that they got to voice act in the film.
Yeah. Let alone that movie's fucking heavy, man.
Yes. That was the other thing I was going to say, is that I feel like Transformers were geared for a G audience. And even though this movie was rated PG at the time, I feel like it very easily today would have been PG-13 just because of the content in the film. But, it's a little weird because it was like the last film that who's Unicron in the film? What's the guy's name? Orson Welles. It was the last film that Orson Welles ever did.
It's
his highest rated too, right?
Possibly. I don't know. But then it's got like the original, obviously Optimus Prime. It's got Eric Idle in it. It's got the Micro Machine Man. Mm-hmm. It's got Leonard Nimoy as Galvatron in the, it's like you look at the roster and you're like, there's no way this can fail. And of course it was a flop, at the time or whatever. And then it's got this like weird mashup of like 80s hair metal soundtrack with like a score from Vince DiCola, who did the fight montages for the Rocky films. And just the whole thing is like completely mind-blowing.
I will still never forget watching the making of with you and the guy who did the key, the did
Vince DiCola,
You're the
yeah.
Best. Yeah, and he's like talking about keyboards and keyboard sounds like really passionately yes. in a way that you're like, all right, man, like I love music too, but this is a little weird.
Yeah, I don't know what disc it's on, but on one of the Transformers 1986 animated film bonus features is an interview with the guy, Vince DiCola, that did the score from the film. And it's like him sitting like behind, you know, in front of like racks of, you know, 80s yeah. style keyboards. And he's wearing like these like, you know, glass bottle, you know, glasses or whatever. And just really like you said, really passionate about that score.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great score.
I just remember being like, if I want to get like this kind of emotion, I hit be-do-de-do-de-do. If I want yeah. this emotion, it's like boo-do-do-do-do. And you're like, all right, man.
Yeah, but people don't know this, but he did all that music. He did the music for
yeah.
The Touch with Stan Bush. He did the music mm-hmm. for Dare with Stan Bush. And then he did the whole score for the film, which is like incredible. And then he was like really, really into it at the time. And it's weird, you guys, that they haven't made a Transformers movie since then. Not a single
so
one.
Weird.
Yeah, it's so weird. I really don't get
they
that.
Made they 74 different cartoons, though, so if you yeah, want to watch one of them.
But never, can. Never another Transformers film. That's really strange. Yeah. let's see. Deus Ex Go came out this week, so I bought it. I haven't started playing it yet, but I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I almost grabbed it. I didn't because I've got other stuff to play. But
yeah, all the Go games that are not Pokemon are really good, like Lara Croft and Deus Ex. And
ooh, Go Burn.
Ooh, Go Burn. Yeah. And then... what I started playing before all this other stuff happened was off the game pile. I started playing Watch Dogs, which both of you guys played when it came out. Yeah. Watch Dogs is like the perfect midpoint between an Assassin's Creed game and The Division. It's almost like a demo for The Division, like playing it now today.
It's the first thing I thought when I started playing The Division as well. There's like even yeah. like some of the tech and like the scanning of phone calls and almost like, mm-hmm. oh, like this even visually looks very, very similar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I like, you said this on Slack also, Scott. I think what Ubisoft does is they take design ideas and kind of iterate on them internally to kind of build something new out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that.
Oh, no way.
I just think it's and you can definitely see, like, there's a lot of really rough edges in Watch Dogs, but hopefully they improve on those with Watch Dogs too.
Yeah, the thing that really burns me about that game, having played a lot of Ubisoft games, is the free running, because you want to be able to scale a fence, but he really can only jump to things that are like half his body height, you know?
Right.
Whereas
right.
like if you're playing Assassin's Creed, everything is climbable. So I run up to a fence and I'm like, please climb this. And he's like, oh, not so sure. I have my cell phone in my hand, so I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, too bad.
Yeah. They made some interesting decisions with the driving and parkouring yeah. in that game.
But I mean, I do like open world games with vehicles, because I do like to drive and race and such. So this is nice, and since there's no Assassin's Creed this year, this will fill that gap perfectly.
News.
Hey, Gamescom's going on right now in Germany, and we're not there.
No, it's expensive to go to Germany.
You were there last year.
It is. I was there last year, yeah. I was thinking about this today. I spent 99% of my time at Gamescom in a 10x10 white room with some posters that we hung up for about 5 days straight, talking to people that didn't really speak English.
Living
all
the dream, man. Wow. Living that dream.
It was incredible. But Gamescom itself was really awesome, and a lot of really big announcements are coming out of Gamescom right now. We don't have all of them because it's still happening for a couple more days, but we do have some. And the first one is a rumor that has popped out of Gamescom, and that is Mass Effect remasters, HD remakes for current-gen consoles are likely on the way.
Of course they are, guys.
Yeah, I know.
Come
on. What do you guys think about that?
I just want that multiplayer. That's all I want.
I just want the multiplayer, too.
Yep. I actually was thinking about it, though. I think I would replay 1 and 2. And, I mean, I'd play all of them, but 1 has been so long, I feel like I'd replay it.
I've 100%ed achievement wise all three of those games, so it would be I'd be very hard pressed to play them all again in that way, but
See, I did my story playthroughs and then like kind of just did multiplayer from that point on.
Yeah.
So I think I would totally I'd replay for sure.
I mean, you guys know
I'd replay
too,
just
Mako.
To see if I could like not lose my entire career.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. It's risky, though, because I hold these games in such high regard. At this point, it might be hard to go back and play them again and have them feel at least mechanically okay. You know, sure. I think the narrative is still going to be a beautiful experience, the music, the visuals, sound. But I feel like a lot of the mechanics, like the, especially like in Mass Effect 2, which is still one of my favorite games of all time, like the cover mechanic and the shooting mechanic and the third person might be a little rough.
Yes.
So playing through that again might be challenging.
At the same time, you know, their play is obviously that, like, there are 13-year-olds with Xbox Ones that never experienced Mass Effect, and they're going to put a new Mass Effect game out. So if you roll out a remaster before that,
this might be the time.
Yes.
It might be the time to do that. And even, honestly, like, Ryan Clark, who's a friend of ours, still has yet to play any of the Mass Effects. And, like, I'm like, dude, you should play these. And if they rolled, he'd buy this in a second and play all of them. So I think it's a good, you know, they should. I think they should, but I would redo it.
And I'll tell you this. We all probably played, I don't know to the extent that everyone completed all of the DLC, but all of the DLC came out probably long after we all completed the game. Mm-hmm, and it would be nice to go back and play Mass 3 with all of those missions already integrated into the storyline.
Yeah.
Where you could just kind of dive off and do them, you know, at your leisure instead of having to sort of, you know, circle back to the point before the point of no return to complete all the missions.
That was always weird, right? Yes. Like, you would complete the main narrative of the story and all this shit went down, and then they release DLC like up to a year late, and you'd have to go back and just kind of play this weird mission that was kind of shoehorned in, and there's only usually like 2 or 3 hours at the most, you know? And I think you're right. Having it actually become part of the experience as you're playing would be really neat.
Yeah. And I really liked, you know, I thought Leviathan was really good. And then, obviously the Citadel was humongous because it was almost like a fan film with all your favorite characters. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool.
So, all that stuff is good. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what is this Assassin's Creed stuff?
Yeah. So there is also a similar rumor that there may be an Assassin's Creed remaster for the, Ezio trilogy. Which is
nice.
Yeah, I mean, 2 and Brotherhood are pretty good. The revelation in Revelations is that it wasn't very good. Yeah. That the story was not very good at all.
Which is the one where you had to start playing weird mini games inside
like
the game.
The first person game?
Yeah.
I want to say,
was it a first person? There was one where you were playing like tower defense all of a sudden, right?
That may have been Brotherhood.
Yeah,
because when you had the crew and you could send them out to help you with those attacks and stuff. Yeah. And then Revelations, I think, is when they introduced that weird first person, like puzzle, like 3D puzzle platforming mechanic.
That was so not good.
Yeah, where you couldn't like really see your feet, and it made it hard to traverse tiles that were disappearing underneath you. That was kind of brutal. But I mean, still a great series. Assassin's Creed 2 is still really good and actually really difficult compared to the games.
Those games could benefit from my new business acronym, Always Strive for Simplification.
Always Strive for Simplification.
I think you're really right. I mean, we've been through this so many times with Assassin's Creed. Yeah. I love those games, but damn, it is like a person that was just like snorting drugs, was like, no, there's gotta be the future. There's a guy in the future, and then he goes to the past, and everyone's like, why don't we just make a game about fucking stabbing people? And they're like, no, the future
mini games and a bunch of other things.
You can take that up with Jade Raymond and ask her why it had to be that way. I'm sure she has a great answer.
Jade would stab me.
Yes, yeah, she
would. The answer is
she definitely would. She definitely would. I would pay to see that.
Jade stab Ash.
Jeez.
Wow.
I'm just keeping the
conversation
going.
I know you like
going.
The future, Scott, but I don't know if my death is necessary.
I mean, after Desmond, I lost my way, you know.
I mean, I don't know if you'll die, Ash. Like, you'd have to get stabbed a lot to die. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways. So yeah, that's the story. That it's rumored that it will come out, and I mean, same idea, right? Is that you've heard a lot about Assassin's Creed. There's like what, 3 games on current gen, but not anything from that trilogy. So it would
Which
be
is
good
feasibly
to...
like the Ezio story, especially like 2, like the first one, is like the, I think, quintessential Assassin's Creed game, right?
That's,
like that is the game. You
that is the Terminator 2 of the Assassin's Creed franchise.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It was just so mind-blowingly good that you were like, holy shit. So I mean, like, to me, I don't know if, I mean, not to, we don't need to derail it really, but like these like collections or these kind of rehashes where they do like vague upgrades of the game and put them out together or with all the DLC or whatever on a new console, like they really don't offend me at all. Like I'm kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You would, yes. You know, it's like putting a best of out to get people back into a music when you're going to put a new album out or something. Like yes. That is totally logical that you'd want to get new players into this world that with the content that sold everybody else originally, you know, like that makes sense. I don't know. I think
And if I may, I'm going to just really quickly plug again, highly overlooked and extremely underrated Assassin's Creed Rogue, which in my opinion is probably one of the best, mechanically, one of the best games in the Assassin's Creed franchise, just because of what you get to do.
What happened to Desmond in that game?
He was not in that game. Actually, but this game actually narratively does something different. It follows the story of an assassin who, you know, as the name might suggest, questions the creed and then goes rogue. And then you're sort of playing as this weird gray area character who is sort of in between the Templars and the assassins trying to figure out what the F is going on. And so you are sort of encouraged to fight a little differently than you do in a normal Assassin's Creed game. And, you know, it came out very late in the console life cycle for the 360. And that's the point at which, like, you know, all of the games are super optimized and everything works really awesome. So, you know, as far as like,
so you're saying though, that like by focusing on one story, the story ended up being good.
Yeah. 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 Isn't that crazy?
What? Maybe one day I'll pick it up.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably get it for $10, but it's really solid.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, Ubisoft's VR. I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Eagle Flight was the Ubisoft, sort of flight simulator that you actually use VR goggles and fly around as an eagle and do various like tricks and, race other eagles and things like that. But, it looks like they are getting ready to actually release, Eagle Flight on Oculus Rift. And I was curious if you guys were even considering picking up VR anytime soon at all.
I have had a minor turnaround on VR somewhat, which is like down the line, I'm not against having it. But I think the one I was looking at wasn't the Rift. It was something that the Veef did recently that I thought was super intriguing. And now I have to like brain scan to remember what it is. It was probably like within a week or two that they showed off something that they did with the Veef, and it involved the hand control, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they did something super, super interesting. And I was like, oh, that actually is compelling. And I cannot for the life of me. So anyways, to shorten, we don't need to make this a podcast of me trying to think of something. unless.
Wait,
do
a
you
second.
Think that's a good idea?
We need to talk.
Did I just stumble upon a great episode of Rated NA? I don't think, I mean, a flight simulator is not going to get me there. It's going to take something truly unique and only expressible through VR and something that I could do in short order kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Like
this is only interesting in the sense that like, that seems like a neat experience, but like $1,000, which is literally what I would have to, put money into to be able to pull off VR, you know?
Right.
Is like way too heavy of an input to like do that.
Yeah, I mean,
that makes sense.
I think what we've been saying all along is there's still not the killer app. There's still not the one game where you're like, I would spend $1,000 to play that game, right?
Right.
And that I don't think that game exists yet. I feel like all the games are still very much experiences.
Yes.
Where you're just kind of like you're doing a thing and it's really awesome that you're doing it, but is it worth $1,000? Like, would you rather spend $1,000 to go on vacation and maybe do that thing in real life? Like, you know, if you could, like, you know, go on a trip someplace or go skydiving or whatever the hell you need to do.
Like,
I don't know.
If I can get the gist of the experience in 5 minutes, I will just go to Best Buy and play the demo machine for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. God, I wish I could remember what the thing I saw. Did you guys see anything intriguing with the Veef?
I did not.
The only thing I saw recently was it was like an adventure / mystery game, and there was a guy that was like he had a table in front of him and he picked up this letter and like he used the heat from a candle to like decode the message that was like hidden in invisible ink on but he actually was using his hands and he was holding up this like virtual piece of paper. And then he got the virtual piece of paper too close to the flame and it caught on fire. And he was trying to like shake it, you know, shake the fire off of the piece of paper, but it burned up, I think, before he could read it. And I was like, that's just really neat that he's using his hands and actually manipulating objects in 3D right there in front of him. I thought that was pretty fascinating, but
yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think we've talked about this the whole time. Anytime HR or VR comes up, which is like, you know, it's an interesting in concept device, whether like it'll ever have super mass appeal or really has anything like that's super useful inside of it, it remains to be seen. To me, nothing is out there yet that is going to make me pick this up, and neither does Eagle Flight or whatever going to make me pick it up. So you know, I don't know, it's one of those wait and sees for me still.
Me too.
Me three.
The next bit is kind of has the internet in a bit of a tizzy right now, and that is the first non-Kojima Metal Gear has been announced, and it is a zombie survival game called Metal Gear Survive, where some of your side characters got sucked into a portal during the events of Metal Gear Solid 5, and now you are in this kind of dystopian, fucked up zombie alternate universe, and you have this base and you're gathering supplies and you're fighting off waves of zombies that are attacking your base. So there's kind of a crafting element, which I know Scott loves. There is a survival element and a zombie element, which I know Matt loves. So it's really weird that this is a Metal Gear game, and this is, I think, has a lot of people really pissed off.
It almost sounds like a licensed product.
Right. It's weird. I mean, a lot of folks are also saying that there is literally no one from Kojima's, Metal Gear team that has worked on this. So,
yeah,
it's weird. It's just a different route to take the franchise. Right. It's not really, you know, espionage, stealthy stuff.
Right.
So any thoughts, any feelings on totally changing the formula?
Man, I'm so far behind on Metal Gear that I don't even know. As far as I know, Metal Gear, you know, my brother's owner or whatever the last one was called is like, he has zombies in it. Who knows? I'm so far out of the narrative that it's like borderline meaningless to me, but
right.
It's like Scott said, this feels like a licensed game. It's hard to have a strong opinion about something that seems so far outside of the field.
The other thing is that it almost sounds like something that Resident Evil has already done. With their franchise.
Yeah, it kind of does, right?
Yeah, because they made some spin-off games too, right? Some weird kind of like not survival horror games.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
It's really weird when you have these franchises that have been around for so long, and the people that making them, obviously, they get older, they move on in life, they're not going to make the same game franchise for, you know, their entire existence, and then you have these younger people with new creative ideas, but then people still have so much nostalgia for, you know, what they remember, that a lot of times these newer iterations of old franchises don't really get a fair shot because they're kind of clinging to that old name, that old license. Like the new Resident Evil, everyone's giving the new Resident Evil tons of shit, Resident Evil 7, because it literally looks nothing like Resident Evil at all. Mm-hmm. Like it's first person. Like nobody knows, like none of the characters from the other six games are in it. It's just like this whole new thing.
It's like the Terminator Genesis of the
of the
Resident Evil franchise.
It is.
Can we just talk about everything?
Amelia Clarke plays Jill Valentine.
Yeah. Can we just talk about everything in terms of the Terminator franchise, like where it ranks?
Arnold Schwarzenegger plays the Tyrant.
Exactly. See.
And I feel like some of it has to do with the same kind of thing that you were talking about with Mass Effect, right? Which is like really what I want, being an old fart, is like to re-get Metal Gear 1, 2, and 3, right? Like, I really want that nostalgia level, like, back. I want it to feel like that again.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not going to, and it never will. So, right. Like, I'm not super offended that they try this new thing, but at the same time, it's like, okay, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to pick it up because it's a zombie game, so...
Right, right.
I vote with my dollars, guys.
There you go. That's right.
I don't know. I'm interested to see if it's any good. I really like the engine they use for Metal Gear 5. I thought it was the best.
Yeah.
In terms of the stealth mechanics and just visually, it's gorgeous. So, and I actually really love the multiplayer in Metal Gear 5. It just came out like when there's tons of other shit out. But, so I'll see. I'll see how it is. But
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? I'll end up picking it up and playing it like 6 years after everybody else has played it. And then I'll be like, did you guys ever play this Metal Gear Survive? They put a real twist on the game.
I just saw the movie Heat.
Yeah. That's like me talking about like fucking Mission Impossible and Terminator. Those are like movies from like 4 years ago. It's like all I have going for me right now. Watch Dogs 2. Watch Dogs 2. It's been a week. The multiplayer reveal came out from Gamescom today, actually, and they did bring back the mode that I absolutely loved in Watch Dogs 1, which was Hacking Invasion, which was super cool. You would jump into someone's game while they're actually playing it. They wouldn't see you there, and you would try and hack them while they were actually, you know, playing other missions. And you had this really fun game of cat and mouse where, you know, you're trying to escape from being hacked and the hacker's trying to hack you. And it was just really kind of the best version of hide and seek in a game that I think I've ever played. So they're bringing that back for Watch Dogs 2, which is cool. And they have a new bounty hunter mode, which I guess allows you to use the whole virtual San Francisco that they built for Watch Dogs 2. And you and a bunch of friends can run around going on different missions together and hacking stuff together and also jumping into enemies' games and trying to hunt down other
players. Did you read about this? What did you see? Like, what the way I understand it is that they were also going to use this as if you build up a lot of heat, you know, with the police or whatever, that other actual players can join the hunt to take you down.
See, isn't that freaking cool?
I think that's really awesome, considering how many different types of games like use a mechanic that's similar to that. You know, imagine if you could, I don't know if like a Need for Speed game does that, but that's like a really big cornerstone of a Need for Speed game. And so just to invite other actual people in on that mechanic, I think is really promising.
It is neat. I mean, so many games, especially these big open world, you know, third person adventure titles,
Grand Theft Auto,
right, where you're being chased by the police, and it's really fun to try and get away. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really like what everybody did when GTA came out, was just try and build up as many stars as you can get.
I did that in GTA 2, man. I played like I think I played for like 3 hours once running from the police.
Just running, and it's so much fun. So having another player in there would really be exciting. So if anything, you know, Watch Dogs 2, I think it's looking very promising. I hope a lot of the, you know, the hiccups from 1 get ironed out, and we'll see.
I feel like it has to do well out of the gate, because I feel like I run in two gaming circles, right? I have like you guys and our listeners and stuff that are all relatively positive and for things and like stuff. And then I go to work and like, like all of a sudden, like the Metacritic trolls show up with my, and my coworkers, you know, they fucking hate Watch Dogs, like to a level that I was like, whoa, guys, like it's not a terrible game. They're like, it's not, I would define it as terrible, like that kind of thing. And you're like, whoa, all right.
Zero stars.
So I feel like that, and I don't think it did super well public opinion wise after it was out, the first one. And I feel like this game's just got to come out, like you said, with none of that kind of like the weird hiccup. It needs like the early adopters to all be like, holy shit, this game's great. They really fixed everything and it's wonderful, like right out of the gate. So
I mean, they even changed the tone. So, I mean, to make it more like Sunset Overdrive, I think is a step in a different direction to show that they're doing something new with the game.
Yeah, away from the kind of heavy Deus Ex kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm not trying to like shit on it. I just feel like we are like the positive minority, I feel like, on this game versus what I've heard elsewhere.
No, I think you're right. And, you know, I just, it's hard. I think this happens a lot to Ubisoft games. I feel like they come out and for like the first tenth of their life cycle, people are like, this is amazing. And then like people are like, why did I ever play that?
Yeah.
You know, and then people kind of stomp around. You're like, didn't you like really love this like a week ago? Like, why does it? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. If you can go just follow the feed on The Division on Twitter and then look at, you know, they'll post something like, hey, we're patching the game this week to, you know, fix something with a gun. And everybody's like, your game sucks.
That turned around very quickly for them. There was like a good month there where like The Division was like all anybody thought about or did, and then that just disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
very quickly. So,
oh yeah,
very strange. Very strange. Speaking of Ubisoft, For Honor is their new big PvE PvP. I guess brawling third person action title that they're coming out with, where it's knights versus
synergy.
What is your slogan, Matt?
Samurai.
Always strive for simplification.
Always strive for simplification.
So also, it's a video game.
Better understanding through talking.
There you go.
That's a good one. Anyway, so For Honor's coming out. It did its full roster of character reveal out at Gamescom. They have four different classes for all three factions. So you have the samurai, you have the knights, and you have the what are the other ones? The Vikings. And there's basically like, you know, scout class, heavy class, kind of middle of the road class, and then a specialist class for each one of these. And it looks pretty cool. It looks like there are going to be maps where you get to play with bots in there too. So there'll be like, you know, a couple dozen other computer controlled warriors and stuff on the battlefield, and you'll get to kind of run around and have these giant medieval battles with your particular character class. And there's all sorts of customization, they said, as well. So you can tweak out your armor and the way your character looks, and you know, I guess different skill trees for the classes as well. So a little bit of customization in For Honor as well.
I know this game will probably be fun. And I know a lot of people have put a lot of effort into making this a top tier AAA game or whatever, but it straight up sounds like something I drew in my middle school notebook. It's like, what if samurais and knights and ninjas and pirates and
that's like, probably the DLC, man.
Pirates,
you probably
yeah.
You probably just spoiled their DLC announcement.
And penguins.
Penguins. Oh man.
Then the vampires show up and they fight the werewolves, and like, oh, it's gonna be so cool. That's middle school. 13-year-old Matt just made a video game.
Dude, it's so funny you said that, because I just found this notebook. I when I was like 8, I made a Nightmare on Elm Street board game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I found the notebook with like all the character classes that I built for it, and it was there was like a killer clown from outer space and a fucking werewolf and a ghost man, and like basically it was like characters just from all the movies that I liked.
Yeah.
And you could just play as them versus Freddy Krueger, but it was totally exactly that. It was just like, it would be so cool if Wolverine and Freddy Krueger and the werewolf from American Werewolf in London all fought. Like
When I was like 12, me and our artist friend Chris Aslan made a comic book about a vampire priest that fought what was essentially Sabretooth from Wolverine comics, like
nice.
Like straight up Sabretooth, and then like something else was involved. It was literally just me mashing everything that we were currently like in love with, you know, in eighth grade or whatever, into a comic book.
I love it.
Anyways, I love that stuff when you look back
at it. Yeah, I was glad I found that. In my brief Overwatch update for all of you out there.
Hold on, I'm gonna take a nap.
Take a nice long siesta. So there's two little things here. I'll just kind of tie them both together. But at Gamescom, they revealed the first new map for Overwatch, which is called Eichenwald, which is, it looks incredible. It's a castle siege where you're actually gonna escort a battering ram, you know, all the way across this town and then across a drawbridge. You have to bust down. You have to make your way inside. And there's a really cool history behind it as well that you can look up if you're into the lore of Overwatch, where this giant battle took place between, you know, mankind and the machines, and there's all these blown up robots around. And absolutely, and if you're into level design and you're into game art, definitely check out the trailer for Eichenwald, because it's really one of the most stunning maps, I think, that I've seen for a first-person shooter. So check it out. It kind of sets the bar, I think, for what maps should look like when you play shooters. Mm. You know, rather than just being very stale and boxy, and it is really vertical and just really kind of stunning to look at. So look at the Eichenwald map if you're into that kind of stuff at all. And the other little piece of news isn't necessarily from Gamescom, but it did happen right around the same time, and it does deal with Blizzard. But there's a nasty habit that people have gotten into when they play Overwatch. And if they kick another team's ass, one team will say, GG space EZ, like good game, that was easy. Like, fuck you, basically. Like, yeah. You guys suck. And so Blizzard has been really incredible with what they've been trying to do to kind of teach their community how to behave. First of all, they have a zero tolerance policy for cheating. You'll just get permabanned, which I think is brilliant. And they also have really easy ways to report people for trolling and people that have bad attitudes. It's just very easy to let them know who these bad players are. And if they have enough offenses, they'll just get banned or kicked, which is great. But for this GGEZ thing, if you actually type GGEZ after this next patch, it will actually translate it to a number of different sayings. And so rather than saying GGEZ, you'll say something like, "It's past my bedtime. Please don't tell my mommy." Or, "Mommy says people my age shouldn't suck their thumbs. I feel small, very small. Please hold me. I'm wrestling with some insecurity issues in my life, but thank you for playing with me." Or, "Come on, mom. One more game before you tuck me in. Oops, mistell." So if you type in GGEZ, you will say that instead, which I think is absolutely amazing.
That's awesome.
So it's their way of sort of trolling the trolls, which I think is good. And I think, you know, more companies should do that. They should really they should show the younger audience, who are often the people that are acting out. No offense to our younger listeners, but you know, a lot of times it's the younger audience who are acting out. They should kind of show them how to be better players. So I think that's great.
Sure. I agree. I fully support this idea of taking an online multiplayer game and just doing ban on the first offense, because at this point there's hundreds of games you can play, and if you don't get it by now, then you shouldn't be playing online.
Right. I agree.
Yep.
So what is Default?
Oh yeah. So, I probably talked about it on this podcast, few years ago.
You played it when we were at PAX South, I think.
Yeah, I did. I was playing it, in the room during our breaks and stuff like that. But Default,
hey, Scott,
what?
I pay attention.
Thanks, man. Hey, I appreciate that. So the Fall is an indie game from Over the Moon studio, and it is a point and click adventure, but it sort of plays out in a Metroidvania style way, and it is it's got like a dark theme, and it is sci-fi. So if you know, if you liked a game like The Swapper, and if you liked sort of the puzzles in the darkness of a game like Inside, then The Fall is sort of, I don't know, somewhere in between maybe those two things, or kind of thematically similar to those two games. But they released the first game a long time ago, and I was actually not really sure if, you know, they were going to make it. Was always intended to be a three-part series, and you know, the developer said like, "I will make the second two parts no matter what," and you know, it's very hard to, you know, while that's nice of them to say, it's always very difficult to actually make that happen at times.
Yeah.
But so far they are staying true to that promise, and they announced The Fall Part 2 Unbound with a release window of, I feel like I wanted to say it was like maybe 2017, quarter one 2017. But it's just a really cool game. You know, it's just you know, Matt mentioned earlier, I guess what I do either intentionally or not is try to highlight some indie games, and you know, this is one of them. So keep an eye out for The Fall Part 2. And if you haven't played Part 1, it's available on Steam. I think it's on Xbox as well.
Sweet.
Awesome.
So I think this next one is...
companies do that.
Yeah. So this next one, though, Titanfall, are they going to get it this week? I don't know if the episode will be out in time.
Well, it's next week as well, the following week.
Yeah, I think it's next couple weekends.
There you go.
Yeah, and it is on PS4 and Xbox One, not just Xbox One. So,
well, we haven't said what it is yet. I kind of preempted it.
Oh.
Go for it, Ash.
Hey, there's a Titanfall stress test. Titanfall stress test going to be on PS4 and Xbox One, Titanfall 2. You get to play, I think, two new modes, some Titan customization, some kit customization. Basically, they're doing a giant stress test. They were inviting a limited number of people for the past few days to kind of get in early, and then they're opening the floodgates this weekend and I believe next weekend. So we'll probably have a full report on Titanfall 2 on the next episode. But
and this is just download, right? You just go to the store, download the preview, and
that's it. Yeah,
bingo, bango, you're playing.
Set 17 gigs, so get ready.
Are you guys excited?
Boy.
It is a honker of a demo, yeah.
I will start that download tomorrow morning.
I think you can actually download it at midnight tonight, starting like Eastern Standard Time, midnight tonight.
Ah, Okay.
Nice. Are you guys excited?
I am, man. Yeah. I'm excited to play with you guys.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still playing a first-person shooter quite frequently. However, I haven't been playing with like my close friends, and that's kind of a bummer. So I'm eager to shoot stuff with my friends.
You know, you should tell us about this first-person shooter, and we'd play it with you. Which one is it?
You know, it's called Quake 2.
I'll play Quake 2 with you, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. You know, speaking about Titanfall, we were talking about The Division earlier and how we all kind of turned away from it. I feel like with Titanfall, I never got tired of it. We just kind of stopped playing to move on to other things. And so I think that's kind of cool because we never like ended up hating that game in the end when we were done with it.
No, and I've actually picked it up since and played it every once in a while when I'm just like, it's Saturday and I'm waiting for Melissa to get ready to go do something or whatever. I'll throw on Titanfall like occasionally and just play for a little bit.
That's awesome.
It's still fun. Yeah. Like it's a solidly fun game.
Love it.
Yeah.
That was also that was also a great game to showcase and promote the functionality of the current gen's like capture and post features.
Oh yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause we captured like so many clips and cool things happening in those games. That was like a really great game for like independent moments that happen.
I'm very curious because the first person shooter space is going to be very crowded this fall and winter.
Yeah.
With new stuff. So
Infinite Warfare.
They all can't do well. So, you know,
right.
And it's plus the way that they're being built, they're all being built with a lot of longevity, a lot of, you know, collectibles and unlockables and prestiging. So it's like once someone gets very invested in one of these titles, they're likely not going to play others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting to see how the communities split up and who goes where. So,
yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah.
We'll see. Quick break and come back with some reviews, and that's it.
Sounds good.
Right.
This is Clementine from The Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast, Still Not Bitten.
Welcome to Matt's Review Corner.
You played the games this week.
I played the only games this week.
That's awesome.
I know.
I'm so excited.
It's as if I'm the only one.
I played Overwatch.
Of course you did.
I was going to say it's as if I'm the only one without child and has time to play games for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. How about that?
Well, ironically, these both were in the past 2 days too. This is not weeks of playing, but we'll kick it off. I picked up the Mr. Robot episode 1 that we talked about. We mentioned earlier from Telltale and
Night School. Yep, Night School.
Yeah, Night School. It is a new mobile game. I'm playing it on my iPhone, but I think it's out on Android as well. And it's got like a very classic Mr. Robot title. I think it spells Freak Show or something along those lines, but it's all different. You know, it's Leet speak, all letters and numbers all mixed together to look like a weird title. So the game follows, Scott's going to remember the title. I am not. The text adventure type game that we played. We both Lifeline. Played it earlier. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Where you essentially, it starts off with a short little video and you pick up a mobile phone off the ground in Coney Island, kind of all in first person. And then the game kind of clicks into a phone interface. And at that point you're using an E-core phone and somebody texts you with an unknown name and number. And they're like, who is this immediately? And they start kind of badgering you with questions about who you are and why you have their phone, and then they slowly start like asking you to do things for them. And then it kind of unfolds from there, and it's hard to describe without ruining either season one. It also takes part during season one of Mr. Robot. So if you're not 100% caught up on season two, it doesn't matter. It's not happening in season two time. It's happening in season one time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're through those episodes, then nothing will get spoiled for you at all. But you're talking to one of the main characters. It was their phone before you got it. Okay. And they are kind of trying to bait you into doing things for them that will assist the F Society's plan from season one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's cool. The other stuff happens. They do a lot of stuff to kind of world build it a little bit, where you'll get like all of a sudden like a group text message will come in to your phone, and it'll be like a bunch of people you don't know, and they start talking about buying birthday gifts for this one girl, and you're like awesome. Half responding to it. Yeah. Like, and then other people will text you. You're getting like Tinder updates, like a Tinder like update. Like, there's a bunch of different apps kind of running and giving you updates while you're on the phone. And it all happens, you know, real time. So you'll text with this one, the one person who's trying to get you to do something, and that person will be like, well, I'm out of here. See ya. And then, like, nothing will happen for 4 or 5 hours. It's actually more spread out than Lifeline was, which is really surprising, because I want to say I played Lifeline over the course of like a day or two. If you respond pretty quickly, usually you would, the wait wasn't that far between response and them coming back to you, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, I don't feel like I'm maybe halfway through the first season or the first episode of this game, and I don't know. I'm it took me all day to do that. I downloaded it in the morning and started it on my way to work. And by the time I got to home tonight, I feel like maybe halfway through. I was like maybe at the first major plot point.
That sounds really fun. I mean, it sounds.
That is really cool.
It's fun. If you like Mr. Robot, I will say there's zero reason to play this game if you do not already watch Mr. Robot.
Right.
Like, it will make no sense to you. You won't know who the characters are. Like, names will pop up that will mean nothing. Like, literally, you have to have watched season one to understand what's going on inside of the game. And then the only other thing, how do I say this without giving away?
Does it feel like it's a promotional product for the show, or does it feel like it
is? No, it feels like it's just part of the world.
Okay.
And your task for the first episode thing that you're doing is related in a way where it could have happened in the show and wouldn't have been mentioned.
Mm-hmm. If
that makes sense.
Okay.
Like, it's a thing that you feel like you could have been affecting that world, you know, while it was actually happening in real time. I actually think it would have been more interesting if it had actually come out during season one and you were like, they put it out at the right time, because it's during kind of the later episodes of season one.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it could have been very interesting back then. So the only negative I give it is that it doesn't feel as, you don't feel, here's how I'll put it. You do not feel as emotionally attached as you did during Lifeline early on.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
The first like 6 hours of playing it, which is not straight 6 hours of gameplay, but like the first 6 hours of that game's lifespan, you're like kind of just on somebody else's phone responding to things, and you've like, it's neat how they do it. Basically, like, a text conversation will happen and then you're supposed to respond and you'll get three options. And then the thing I really appreciated is that when you click the option, it shows you like kind of typing the message into the message board.
Yeah.
So you actually get to read the message before you send it. So like, you can pick a choice, and then if you're like, oh, that's not what I intended, you can pick one of the other two and it'll delete what you texted. It'll delete like what you had typed and then type the next thing. And then you hit send to actually make that decision during the game.
Yeah.
So like that stuff's all really great. The mechanics are really great. The storytelling's really good. It's just, there's not a ton of emotional attachment early on in the first episode, which I feel like Lifeline had pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
Because of the kind of the situation you're in. And this one's just a different situation that doesn't cause that. But if you're looking for like a really low energy game that is in the Mr. Robot world and like isn't going to take a lot of your time or energy or effort, but like will still kind of add a new, you know, little piece to that story. So far I'm having a fun time. It's just a little different when you're starting it than some of these other text games.
Right. I would encourage anyone that has a similar experience to stick with it, just because, you know, based on what Night School has done so far with Oxenfree being really solid and compelling, you know, as you play through that game. And then also the studio itself is made up of, you know, ex Telltale and ex Disney people. So, you know, they know how to design a narrative and an experience. So I think based on the pedigree, just you know, stick with it if you're not into it at first.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say that, like, you know, whatever 8, 10, 12 hours that I'm in now, into this game, the first interesting thing that could happen, I just did.
Got it.
So, like, you go, your first real task in the game happens that kind of long into the game. And what's really interesting about it, and really interesting about the pacing, is that I sent that text off, 3 hours ago, and I haven't heard back yet, and it is stressful.
So
the timing of it, even though it's stretched out longer and like it's kind of a slower moving game and maybe a little less emotionally connected immediately, the stuff that does happen because of the timing, when you do certain things, you're like, oh Jesus, why haven't they responded yet? And like, that's kind of interesting that they're almost playing that timeline on purpose, it seems like. So
that's interesting.
So yeah, I think it was pretty cool. I like the game overall. There are things that I feel like if they did in it, I would think are amazing, but I don't think they're going to do. So maybe I'll send an email to them and be like, you know, it'd be really cool.
I'm sure they'll respond to you right away.
Yeah, I'm sure. It was, I think $2.99 was the price, and so far so good. So nice. Hopefully,
awesome.
Hopefully it continues that path, but enjoying it. And then the other
about
game,
Batman.
Yeah, Telltale's Batman for Xbox, which is also, I think, on all the other devices that they launch on, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I believe so. So you started it, you said.
I played through the first section and a half of the first chapter of the game. I mean, like, so okay. This is episode one. I've played through the first
five pieces to the episode.
Yeah, I've played through the first piece and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you played as Batman and then into Bruce Wayne for like a minute.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what I've done so far.
So the first chapter, kind of follows Batman through, you know, we're probably like mid Batman career, somewhere in that range. You're not brand new Batman, but you're not haggard old Batman either. You're kind of still young Bruce Wayne. And it's following the storyline of Harvey Dent's run for mayor of Gotham. Fun fact, did you guys know that Batman's parents died?
Oh my god.
Boy.
Yeah.
Is that really in this?
I was going to bring that up.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah. Nope, it is. Yep. Yep.
I think the game pretty much assumes that you have zero knowledge of Batman and have just sort of like lived under a rock and have never seen like a Batman t-shirt or anything, really.
It is mind-blowing that they keep retelling this story. Mm-hmm. It's not a heavy piece of it, I will say, but it is a heavy emotional charge to what's going on, but it's not like they don't show it and tell it over and over and over again, but they do show it once.
But they do mention
mention it a bunch. It's mentioned throughout the entire episode, like the whole five parts. They it's like the driving force, but there is sort of reason behind it. But they did actually show it again, and I'm like, why? Like, where are we in society? Who do we have to vote for or talk to be like, can we never see Bruce Wayne's parents die ever again in life?
Oh, my God. I just can't believe. I don't know. I'm sick of all origin stories, personally.
Yeah.
But I just can't believe that they're still doing this again.
Yeah. There's a lot of nudge, nudge, wink, wink in the game. Tons of characters that if you read the comics, you'll be like, holy shit, they already introduced these people. None of which I will ruin for Scott or anyone else, but it's interesting. They're setting up a lot of character storylines that were very good in the comics and are not told a lot, if that's kind of leading in one direction or another. They have a few different characters that are sort of... They had huge arcs maybe in Batman at one point in time. Like somebody did, you know, like a trade's worth of stories on this one bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's a great storyline, but it's not one that's been told in the movies. It's not one that's been, you know, done on the cartoon to death. So I think it's really interesting that they're using those bad guys that they haven't even named yet, but I know them by their other alter egos, you know?
Uh-huh.
So that's really great. All the Telltale stuff, I mean, is there and wonderful. The decisions are hard. It's really kind of a lot of it's gray area. You're not really sure the choice you made is the one you really wanted to make, but you're under such a gun, like, you know, to like do it that you just kind of you mm-hmm. go with the gut kind of thing. So
I have like one initial impression. I mean, I enjoy the game, but I have one like negative impression so far, and I want to see if it's something that you felt or noticed as well.
Sure.
Which is, it seems like with every Telltale game, there is something slightly different in terms of like the gameplay or the choices or something, right? And
right.
I so far I feel like with this game there, I have not seen anything new in terms of the actual gameplay of making choices or doing quick time events or even, you know, managing inventory like you did in Borderlands or anything like that.
Yeah, I haven't either. And I would actually say the quick time events seem more forgiving than they used to be.
Yes.
Like I feel like in Walking Dead, you died the moment you messed up one quick time event. You were just dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see that there's some kind of thing where you're filling up like a Batman focus meter for like a finishing move or something, but.
And you get a finishing move, but it felt like I never didn't get that.
Yeah. It's hard to tell what the achievement is for filling that thing, you know, what you actually get as a reward for doing that in the game. So I'm not making the connections yet, but I mean, that being said, Telltale still has a really great formula, but so far I've not seen anything that I'm like, oh, they've never done that before in terms of, you know, gameplay.
Yeah. I did notice one thing that Telltale seems to do that happened to me in this game, which is they give you a sort of game defining moment, like in, you know, chapter 3, let's mm-hmm. say. I don't know if that's literally when it happened, but you know, somewhere around there, they give you this moment that you make a decision to do or not do something that will then be referenced again later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it and you feel like you chose right and you know what your choice was. And then it'll go to the next piece and you can tell it's pre-scripted regardless of your choice. And then they'll tell you you did the thing that you didn't do.
Oh, really?
Which has happened. Yeah, like there was one where it's like I could have beat up a guy and or not. And I didn't. Hurt him at all, essentially, and then it went back to the next scene, and the next scene was like me and Alfred, and he's like, oh, you really brutalized that guy, and I was like, what? No, I'm like, I'm gonna be like, no, I didn't, and
verbally.
Yeah, it was like gray area enough that like I guess you could say that in like a pre-canned script and it wouldn't be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those, like, the game is so defined by you making choices, like that's really the main mechanic, that when it comes back wrong in the script, it feels weird and sudden. You're like, oh, that's not actually what I did. But it was only once, and it wasn't like breezed right by it. And then after that, it seemed like everybody knew that I didn't do the thing that supposedly I did.
Yeah. I noticed, I mean, two things I did notice that are somewhat interesting and different is that the very first thing you get to do in the game is choose the accent color for your Batman tech, which is weird.
For like what? yellow, purple, green, or red is your Batman tech. So your like computer screens and your eyes and your tech that you use
has like a glow, to it. Like the highlighting and the accenting will be like all neon purple or whatever.
What'd you go with?
I went with purple, I think, because it was dark.
Matt chose green.
I went yellow.
Oh,
for classic Batman, yeah.
Yeah, classic Batman. Look cool.
And the other thing I noticed, which I think is cool for them, is that, you know, every time at PAX they do events where it's like, they call it crowd play, where everyone kind of makes the decisions together.
Yeah.
They actually built that functionality in a menu option into the game.
Yeah, so you sign up through your Telltale account, and then you can, when you're playing, you can opt into crowd play. And I guess is it your friends through Xbox, or does it go through social media or something?
I don't know how it works. I didn't turn it on, but I'm assuming it has something to do with what they were doing at PAX events for a while. You know, I thought it was for streaming, honestly, is why they put it in.
Yeah, maybe it's through streaming. They built that in, so it showed the UI. Like I signed up and then watched the video on it.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like depending on your decision or what you're doing, people can either vote up or down, or they can actually make a choice from the menu, and then. It wasn't super clear as to whether you had to go with their choice or not, but like, you know, you get the crowd play of everybody kind of chooses to.
So maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's a system in which, like, you know, they can be sitting at PAX or you can be sitting on Twitch and be like, okay, I'm making this decision. And then maybe it pulls something from Twitter or whatever, some social media thing. And everybody goes like, okay, you told me to make this decision. So that's what I'm going to do. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It seemed like it,
but that's good for streaming, you know? So that's kind of smart on their part to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. One other kind of random comment. I was playing the game. Melissa came in like in the middle of me playing, and she sat down, and her first comment was, "This game looks really cool." So
wow,
It apparently has good looking graphics. I mean, they look great, but they look very, very Telltale. Like, they've got that kind of edge to it.
Yeah, they've always been good on the art front.
What's that?
They've always been good on the art front.
Yeah. I will also say though that this chapter, and who knows how much of the game ultimately, but this chapter is super Bruce Wayne heavy. I think out of the five chapters, you're Batman twice, and then you're Bruce Wayne the other three times.
Okay.
Actually, Scott, there is a new thing that you did not do yet.
Okay,
so
good. Great.
They do have a detective mode of sorts that you have to like piece together a crime later on while you're playing. So that's a little different. You kind of like, you still do the, I need to inspect, and you'll like kind of look around and click on items of importance. And then you have to like chain those pieces together in the correct manner to actually piece the crime together.
Oh,
and
excellent.
Great. And then that'll from there. It's not a huge mechanic, but it is a new mechanic for Telltale.
Hey, that's good for me.
Otherwise, like, if you have enjoyed any of the other games, this is, I think, pretty high up in the list for me. I would rate it... Oh, man. You guys liked Walking Dead a lot better than me. I did not love Walking Dead.
Which Terminator film would you rate this game?
I hated Game of Thrones. This is like I would put this at like a Terminator 1.
Really? Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's like that's super enjoyable, but definitely not the top, you know, but
not
like you throw it on, if it's on, you're going to watch it, you know, like it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of like a Terminator 1 level.
Yeah.
So,
that sounds pretty good.
But yeah, enjoying it. I think it's great. And I'm going to say thanks, Scott, because this was his birthday gift to me.
Oh,
so thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. So far for me, this is a Terminator salvation, which I actually enjoyed. So that's where I'm at.
I would totally understand that, but I think when you get through the whole thing, you'd be like, "Oh, okay." Like it gets good as
it'll
goes.
Bump it
and
up
the
to Terminator
good.
One.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think the middle chapters, the decisions get really difficult, and that's when I think Telltale really pays off. Like you're like, "Oh yeah, this was a hard thing for me to figure out what I wanted to do."
Okay.
And like that's when I think the game really shines.
Good.
So.
Good. Good. Right. Good. Can't wait. Perfect.
Yeah. I'm glad it's good. I'll probably play it eventually.
Just on the off chance that they're listening, can we please get more Wolf Among Us? Like, this is the greatest game they've ever made. And I am pleading with Telltale right now for more Wolf Among Us.
It's interesting. When you go to, like, more games from Telltale, these are the only two games that show up, is, like, buy more Batman or buy the Wolf Among Us in this particular game.
Oh, really? I didn't look at that. Yeah, Wolf Among Us is... God, you guys still haven't played or finished it, right?
Yeah, I'm still kind of waiting to get started.
I said the first episode.
So good.
Yeah. I'll play it.
All right.
Well, we did.
All right.
Got to the end.
We did it. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 242 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter, and that's @NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Scott, Matt, or Ash @NerdAppropriate.com. Or if you have a general question, just send it to nerds@NerdAppropriate.com, and one of us will write you back. We have a Twitch TV channel, which is twitch.tv/NerdAppropriate. Facebook and YouTube, both /NerdAppropriate as well. And all sorts of fun stuff coming up. I'll be going to PAX and, I guess, talking to people and playing
some
shit.
Man.
Oh, it's all right. It's all right. I'll find somebody to talk. I'll do daily wrap-ups by myself. I'll be today I played a game.
You can just have a guest on each time.
That's true.
Yeah,
I think I'll know a couple people there.
We've got friends.
Yes, we do.
In low places.
And high places.
But anyway, so we'll be back next week with an all-new show, I think before the PAX show, maybe. And if not, then I'll be sending Scott some audio from PAX. So
good.
It's been fun, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Have a good week. You played the games. It's very exciting.
I know, right?
Yeah.
What a Shyamalan twist.
All right. Well, let's save this magic for the podcast.
Sure. All right. Ready?
Yeah.
You're Shyamalan magic.
I am.
We're going to not get his name right at all. The Shyamalanian twist. All right.